Hi, this is Susan Schoffer, your certified divorce coach and custody ally. This video is about how to choose the right attorney. One of the things that I encounter a lot with my clients is the problems with their attorneys. More importantly, attorney hopping, going from one attorney to another. And this is because they just haven't found the right attorney. So in this presentation, you are going to learn how to find your best attorney that you can for your particular case and stay with that attorney from the beginning to the end of your divorce and beyond if you need be. So a couple things that I want to address starting off is what you're going to learn during this presentation. The first thing we're going to address, or I'm going to address, are the six issues that could derail a divorce. Some of the objections you may encounter as you go through the divorce. The ways divorce attorneys charge you, the 10 questions to ask a prospective attorney, and the 10 answers you must receive before you hire an attorney. So let's get started. There are six issues that could derail a divorce. And that is, number one, your spouse has considerably more money than you and can keep the litigation going on if they choose to. And if they become vindictive, that's just something they may do. Number two, your spouse will not agree with reasonable negotiations, no matter how reasonable they are. And if they do, they violate negotiation settlements, anything, even after they sign the agreement. Number three, your spouse uses the children, if you have children, as a weapon against you. Number four, your spouse attempts to alienate your children against you. Number five, the divorce becomes a never-ending saga. It goes on and on and on. And sadly, number six, ongoing post-divorce issues and decree contempts. This means even when you're divorced, your ex-spouse just does not want to cooperate. This is why you must have the most skilled attorney. Acquiring the correct attorney is the most important part of the divorce process. There are so many family law attorneys out there. I'm sure you've perused Google. They're everywhere. But that doesn't mean all attorneys are created equal. Attorney hopping can make you appear emotionally unstable. It makes you look like you're not able to work within the framework of an attorney-client relationship. And it also becomes very expensive because every time you stop with one attorney and you begin with another one, you have to start the clock all over with a new attorney. And that includes spending more and more and more money. To avoid attorney hopping, you must hire the best possible attorney for your case, which is what I'm going to show you how to do. I have developed an attorney checklist, and that is a checklist of 10 questions to ask any prospective attorney that you are interviewing, and the answers they must give you before you consider them to represent you. Remember, you hire the attorney. The attorney works for you. Sometimes people get so very involved with, I need to find an attorney. They're the expert. And they develop this parent-child relationship as though the attorney is the boss. And even though the attorney has the experience and the attorney has the legal knowledge, you hire them. You pay them. So it's imperative that your attorney works for you. Now, that doesn't mean you have to be a slave driver and be obnoxious and be demanding. You want it to be a nice, comfortable relationship. But at the end of the day, you are the one who writes the check. You are the one who pays them. Therefore, you are the boss. So I'm going to go over the 10 questions you must ask. And there's others. Before you go into an interview with an attorney, be prepared. Just don't shoot off at the hip. It's an interview. You want to find out if they can do the job you want them to do. And very often we hire attorneys because they are referred to us, friends and family, had great experiences with a particular attorney. But the truth is that attorney may not be good for you. So it's imperative that you set up the ground rules. You set up what's important to you. So before you go in to speak with any attorney, have a little list, have some bullet points about what's going on in your particular situation so that you can give them an overview of what kind of divorce you're dealing with. Is it a simple one? No children, not a lot of property? Or do you have a very contentious spouse and there's children and you're concerned about alienation? Or are you immersed with finances? Do you and your ex-husband-to-be or your ex-spouse-to-be, your ex-wife, do you have a business together? Do you own a lot of property? The more immersed or meshed you are with that person, the more complex the divorce can be. So you want to make sure that you don't leave any stone unturned. And listen, we learn how to get married, but we don't learn how to get divorced. Divorce has become very complex. So you want an attorney who understands your particular situation and can represent you to the fullest and do a great job for you. So your list of questions is not limited to the ones that I've drawn up, but these questions are imperative. These are the questions out of all the research that I've done, the areas that become problematic that people don't address first and foremost. So let's go over them, and each one I will explain to you and take some notes if need be. If not, they're right here on the PowerPoint for you to refer to anytime you want. So the first question to ask an attorney is, what is their area of expertise when it comes to family law cases? Now, some people have said to me that they have an attorney that does all kinds of legal work, meaning accidents, workers' comp, family law, business law. And I'm not saying that that person is not a good attorney, but it's almost like going to a doctor who's a general practitioner. You may go to your internist for, you know, your garden variety head cold, but if you become a diabetic or if you have heart problems or back problems, that's when you get sent to a specialist. And I think attorneys work the same way. It's really to your advantage to have an attorney who is specifically family law or divorce attorney. And the reason I say that is because they understand all the nuances that you may encounter going through your divorce. Also, they stay on top of the latest changes in laws when it comes to either custody or parental alienation or finances when it comes to divorce. So I really highly recommend that you talk with a divorce attorney. Sometimes they're called matrimonial attorneys, other times they're called family law, but basically all they do is divorce. When you meet with them, you want to ask them, what is their area of expertise when it comes to family law? Are they really talented when it comes to making a settlement, meaning the financial side of it? How about parental alienation? Do they understand division of property and how talented are they in that area? And also, how good are they with high conflict divorce? Now you may come back and say, well, wait a minute, all divorces are high conflict. Oh, they're actually not. And I remember a few years back, somebody came to me and they were really upset because they had interviewed some attorneys and an attorney they really liked came back and said, look, I can't take your case. This is really a high conflict and I don't deal with these kind of cases. Well, boy, was this woman upset. She came to me just on fire. She said, how dare she? She's a divorce attorney and she won't take my case. And I said, wait, stop. She did you a great service because if she doesn't specifically deal with high conflict divorces, and here you have one of the highest conflict divorces, you're not going to be happy. And in a few months, you are going to be more than frustrated. You will have spent a lot of money for her and she will be out of her league. So it's nice to know that up front. Now, some attorneys, I will be honest, are a little arrogant and they think they can handle it all. But ask the pertinent questions about your case so that you can determine if you feel comfortable with them handling your particular case. Number two, you want to ask the attorney, what was their most contentious case and how did they win it or not? What I mean by that, and I'm not saying you have a contentious divorce or a high conflict divorce, you may have a wonderful divorce, but divorces can switch on a dime. And I've met many people who they and their soon to be ex sat down, talked about dividing a property. They were going to be equitable with the children. And somewhere along the way, the house of cards all fell apart and one person became contentious. And then before you knew it, they were in a war of the roses type of divorce, battling back and forth, everything down to who gets the silverware, who gets the sofa. And battling with the children. So I think it's imperative at the onset to ask and be in agreement about what you mean by contentious or high conflict, so that the two of you, as an attorney or client, you know what that means. If you already have a high conflict or contentious divorce, it's a good idea to bring it out to the open right then and there so that you know if they are able to handle your case, and ask them how many cases they've had similar to yours. You don't need names. And if they won the case, what are some of the tactics? Ask them what some tactics they may want to use for your particular case. What are they thinking as the two of you sit there and have this initial discussion? You want to ask how long the case took. This will give you an idea as to whether the attorney will move your case along in a comfortable length of time or if they plan to drag it out for years. I've seen bad divorces. I've seen good divorces, if there can be such a definition, good divorce, if there even is one. But I think the worst out of all the divorces I see are the ones that go on for 3, 4, and 5 years. I'm not saying you should rush a divorce, but wow, 4 or 5 years gets to be too long, and you don't want that. So you want to be able to move on with your life, and you want to find out how quickly this attorney moves. And that leaves me to number three to ask your attorney. When does the attorney believe your divorce will be final? Get a ballpark date. Your attorney cannot say to you a specific day that your divorce will be final, but they have an idea. They have an idea with the benchmarks in the court. So if it takes 4 or 5 months to file a divorce, from there, how many months before you would get a mediation date? How many months after that before you would get a settlement date? They have a pretty good general idea, barring that nothing comes up. Now, of course, they don't know what your ex or soon to be ex will do, so they have to keep that in consideration. But if they understand your case and something problematic comes up, they should be able to diffuse it very quickly. So an answer, I don't know, is not an answer. It's too vague. Move on. Number four, if there are children involved, does the attorney understand parental alienation? If you are undergoing any type of parental alienation at this time, your attorney must be educated in parental alienation. They must have experience with parental alienation, and they must have been able to diffuse parental alienation in previous parental alienation cases. Now, I've just said parental alienation a lot, and I understand that that's my area of specialty. So you may think, she's a little bit biased when it comes to parental alienation. Actually, I'm not. I love the cases where the parents work in tandem together so that the children stay healthy within the framework of the divorce, where parents co-parent beautifully. Sometimes I've seen where people actually get along so much better after they're divorced and the children really thrive because the parents put the children first. But I also see the other side of the equation. I see cases where people have said early on they were going to act in the best interest of the children and did anything but act in the best interest of the children. I also have seen cases that started out where parents were getting children to side with them against the other parent. And if that's going on, even if it's not, you want to make sure that your attorney understands parental alienation, especially if you have little kids. If your children are 17, 18, that's one thing. But if they're 2, 4, 6, 9, 10, you want to make sure that your attorney understands parental alienation, because parental alienation can start insidiously and propel ever so quickly. And before you know it, your child doesn't want to see you, doesn't want to be with you. You don't know what hits you. And if you have an attorney that doesn't understand how that happens, it will go from bad to worse. So you want to make sure upfront that they understand, that they have education in, experience with, and have diffused parental alienation. Those four, let me say it again. They understand parental alienation. They are educated in parental alienation. They have experience with parental alienation, and they have diffused parental alienation in previous parental alienation cases. If you think, or you are already involved in any aspect of parental alienation and you are shopping attorneys, this is your most important question. It doesn't have to be the first one you ask, but it is the most important because this will make the difference between you having a healthy, ongoing relationship with your children and not. So this is critical. This is a critical question to ask and one to have specific answers. Number five, talk about money straight away. Nobody likes to talk about money. They go in to interview an attorney. The attorney does a great job of selling themselves. The client, you, get wowed over with this. I love their office. Got a great office. That receptionist is nice. And the candy in the little bowl in the front is just my favorite. But the point is, that doesn't make a good attorney. And you also need to talk about the money. The money is really important. I can tell you that a large handful of my clients come to me because their attorneys have dropped them because they can no longer afford the legal expenses. And not because these are bad people, not because they are deadbeats, but because they didn't understand the way the attorney was paid. So I'd like to take some minutes to talk about it. Not everybody has experience with attorneys. So let's talk about how your attorney will be paid. Attorneys in general are paid one of three ways. One is what's called contingent or contingency, meaning they don't get paid unless a settlement is won. And this is primarily for accident cases. You probably see this all the time, these attorney television ads where they say, we don't get paid unless you win. And that's because they can look at the parts of your case, decide if you have one. And if they take your case, they're about 99% sure you will win or you will get something and they will get a fee. So they don't take any money from you. They take a percentage of your settlement. So if you have a car accident and you get $10,000 and they take your case on and they say, I'm going to get 30%, you will pay them $3,000 after the case is over, the day you win the case. So that contingency is pretty much for accidents or other kind of lump sum settlement cases. The second way an attorney can be paid is a flat fee. One fee for the entire case, no matter how long it takes or how much time they put into it. This can be for very simple cases. The person who mows your lawn didn't finish up the job and you're suing them for $1,000, you hire an attorney and they go, okay, for $400, I'll go to court. And you pay them a flat fee. And that's because they look at your case. They know that what they have to do to go to court, how much preparation time it will take them. They figure out their billable hours. Let's say they figure it'll take them 2 hours and they bill at $250 an hour. They say to you, for $500, I'll represent you. Now, if it takes them another hour or two, it doesn't matter. They really keep it in that two-hour frame, flat fee. Divorce cases are handled differently, and most of those are paid by way of a retainer. So what exactly is a retainer, and how does it work? Well, you pay a fee up front. As the attorney works on your case, they will charge the expenses and their billable hours against the retainer. At the end of each month that they work for you, they will send you a bill with an itemized list of the charges applied against the retainer. And then there will be a final balance of what is left in your retainer that will be included. So the example I want to give you here, which is relatively simple, let's say you pay $10,000 as a retainer and your attorney tells you that they bill out at $250 an hour. Let's take the first month they work for you. They file your case and in court, and it takes them 2 hours to do the filing. At $250 an hour, that comes to $500. You take the $250 an hour times the 2 hours, comes to $500. Let's say also during that month, you had a phone call with your attorney and it was 10 minutes. They will take a portion of their time, $250 an hour, allocate the 10 minutes, it comes to $42. That also comes out of the retainer. In that first month, if they drew up the interrogatories, which we will talk about throughout this program, are questions that you and your attorney ask of the other side, meaning your soon-to-be ex and his or her attorney. So let's say your attorney spent 4 hours on the interrogatories in that month. The 4 hours times $250 per hour comes to $1,000. So what your attorney has charged that month, 2 hour filing fees of $500, the phone call at $42, the interrogatories, 4 hours at $250 an hour, totals $1,542. What the attorney will do is take that $1,542 out of the $10,000 retainer. And if you subtract $1,542 from $10,000, your retainer balance is now $8,458. So when you hear an attorney say that they charge against the retainer, what they mean is you basically have like a little bank with them and they take out their charges as they go instead of having to hunt you down and have you write a check or sell the money or Venmo the money or overnight the money or wire the money. That gets so complicated. So they would rather just charge you a retainer and you take the money out of that retainer. So what does all that mean? Most attorneys will have you sign a contract in order to have them represent you. And that contract usually reads that the retainer must be replenished when it gets to about 50%. So in the example that I just gave you, where you provided your attorney with a $10,000 retainer, once that balance would fall below $5,000, if the attorney stated in the contract, once the retainer gets to be about 50%, you have to replenish it. That would mean you would have to get $5,000 to bring the retainer up to the original amount. In other words, the attorney always wants that nice fluid amount between the 50% mark and the total full retainer throughout the course of your relationship with them. When your divorce is over, if there is money still in that retainer, you will get it back. Now, what happens if you fall below the 50%? This is where it gets very scary, because many attorneys will just stop their services if the balance falls below 50%. Some will actually withdraw from the case if the balance stays below 50% for more than 3 months. And that's why I've talked a little bit expansive on this subject of retainer, because I get calls all the time where people's attorneys have dropped them. And I hear very sad stories where they've been with their attorney for a year or 6 months or 9 months, and now their attorney just said, look, you haven't been able to replenish the retainer. So please understand how this works so that there are no surprises when your attorney asks for it. Also, keep in mind, you sign a contract with your attorney, and it states in there that you have to replenish that retainer or they will stop representing you. You have to do it, because they will stop representing you. And then what happens? You begin attorney hopping. And then you have to look for another attorney. And guess what happens when that happens? You have to start all over. They want a retainer. And then they have to learn your case. So they have to spend money backpedaling, doing what you've already had done. So understand that retainer as best as possible so that you don't attorney hop because you're not able to pay the full retainer. The most cost-intensive stages of divorce are the initial filing, interrogatories, which are the asking of questions, depositions, case preparation, and court appearance. In other words, all stages of divorce are cost-intensive, and those legal expenses can add up. Some attorneys will ask you, at their initial meeting with you, how much do you have available to charge on your credit cards? How much do you have in savings? How much do you have in retirement? Can you borrow from family or friends for legal expenses? How much equity do you have in your home? These are all questions so that they know that they will get paid. So if you go through your savings Then you can charge on your credit cards. Then you can close out your retirement account. Then you can ask family and friends. Then you can borrow off your home. Not a good bet. Make sure that you can afford your attorney. Protect yourself from financial devastation. Just as you would not live beyond your financial means, do not do so with your legal representation. Only hire the attorney who works within your budget. Now, that's a toughie because you want the best attorney that money can buy. So your next question may be, what if I don't have money for an attorney? There are many helpful legal services. Most towns have legal aid. They have attorneys that work pro bono. Pro bono means for free or a very small stipend. And those attorneys sometimes advertise within some legal organizations. Some jurisdictions have what's called maybe free Wednesdays or free Mondays, where once a month there are attorneys that will answer questions for people. And some of those attorneys, either they themselves do work pro bono or they do them at a reduced rate, so you can meet them that way. You can walk into your courthouse jurisdiction and ask, say, I am ready to have a divorce. I cannot afford an attorney. Where can you direct me? And they will have resources to direct you to find an attorney that fits your budget. Now, you want to find an attorney who fits your budget and also understands your case. And that can be a tough card because sometimes these attorneys are great and sometimes they're not great. But that's the same in the population where you pay a lot of money. Some attorneys you pay a lot of money for are great and sometimes they're not. So some of the attorneys that do this work for a lesser price, they're not doing it because they're bad attorneys. Actually, many of them are extremely successful. They have been attorneys for a long time. They are fabulous at what they do. They give back. Some jurisdictions actually have the name of one or two attorneys who come to the court and they say, I like to do a case for a little less money or a lot less money, put my name out there, so that they will take one or two or five or six clients per year that don't have the financial resources to pay for an attorney, but they can still get a great attorney this way. I also want to mention something that most people don't understand, and that's called petition the court or ask your prospective attorney to ask for your spouse to pay legal expenses. So let me tell you how that works and why you can ask for this and you can get it. So let's say you are a stay-at-home parent, male or female. One of you have decided to stay home and take care of the children, and you've done so for many years. You have forfeited time to be out there in the workforce working on your career. And you and your spouse have decided that one of you would do the work outside the home and the other would do the work inside the home. Neither is more valuable. However, the work outside the home does achieve and acquire financial remuneration, where working in the home does not necessarily provide a paycheck. So you and your spouse decide that you want to get a divorce. And your spouse, who has all the money, goes out there, gets an attorney, writes the retainer, goes, great, I have a salary and I'm going to pay the attorney. But wait a minute, what about you? You are just as entitled to use the marital assets, as is your spouse, for attorney fees. If your spouse can take from the marital assets to acquire an attorney, you can also. So discuss that with your attorney straight away when you're interviewing. When I say your attorney, when you are interviewing attorneys, a prospective attorney looking at your financial situation should not just see dollar signs. If you discuss, you know, I've been out of work, my soon-to-be ex earns $180,000 a year and they gave a $10,000 retainer out of the marital assets, so can you. So you have that entitlement. Make sure you have an attorney who's willing to ask your spouse to pay your legal expenses. As an aside, if your spouse has to pay their legal expenses and yours, the likelihood of them creating conflict and contention gets lower because they don't want to have to pay your legal fees. And if they continue on a contentious high conflict route, legal fees will not only be exponential on their responsibility, but it will be for yours too, and they will be forced to pay it. So this is a win-win for everyone. So don't forget to ask a prospective attorney to ask your spouse to pay legal fees if you've been either a stay-at-home parent or if one of you makes so much more money than the other. So let's say your spouse made $300,000 a year and you had a part-time job making $20,000 a year. You would be eligible to have your spouse pay your legal expense. So your attorney must discuss with you and bring this up in this initial interview. Clear about payment. You have to understand how the retainer works. An attorney that you're interviewing who says, you know, don't worry about the money. We'll get there when the time comes. No. Discuss it right up front so you're clear. Because if you're not, the mistakes that come along the way will fall into your lap and it will be because you're not clear about how payment is to be made. Discuss the terms of the contract if your attorney has one. More than likely, they will have you sign a contract, and some of them can be very lengthy and they are in legalese. I guarantee you won't understand most of it, but make sure you do, because where you will get caught, where you will get confused, where things will get murky will be in the part of the contract you don't understand. So if you are in breach of contract at any point, it won't be because it's intentional on your side. It's because you don't understand. So make sure you understand the contract. Have the attorney explain the retainer agreement. Make sure you understand how that is. If they say, well, we ask for 50%, but you know, if you drop below 20, we don't really care. See that a little red flag-ish, because they may tell you that while you sit in their office, but if they're not the managing partner, if they are not the finance office, if it's a bigger outfit, you will start getting these emails, you will start getting bills from their finance area, and they will be very cumbersome. You already have enough on your plate. You're already stressed out. You don't need another layer of stress from your attorney. So get that retainer agreement understood. If your attorney is a one-stop shop and they say, look, I have this in a contract, but I'm pretty relaxed about it, still feel that out, because they have it in writing what that retainer means. And that contract is not just about them getting the money. It also gives them an out. So if you haven't paid, they can say, look, I won't represent you. So have them explain that retainer agreement. Also, the attorney must inform you what happens if the case goes beyond the agreed upon time. If your attorney tells you initially on, there's no way this divorce should go more than 18 months and you're now 24 months into it, you need to find out how you got to that place or how that could happen. So when you sit down with the attorney and in your initial conversation and you ask them, how long do you think this is going to take? And they say 18 months. Say to them, what happens if it goes on? How do I get charged? How do you represent me? What would be the next steps? Now, that's very vague and crystal ball, kind of looking into the future. How do we know what's going to happen until it happens? But attorneys have an idea of where things get hung up. So this would not be a foreign question, and it surely should not be a difficult one to answer. Number 6, please discuss communication between you and the attorney. This is probably the number one complaint I hear all the time about people about their attorneys. They tell me their attorney doesn't communicate with them. They don't talk to them. They don't answer emails. Well, let's get this all out in the open from the beginning. Communication is imperative in any relationship that you have. You probably realize that when your marriage wasn't working out. Many people say, oh, my ex was a terrible communicator. Well, guess what? Any good relationship needs good communication. And if you don't have it between you and your attorney, you will be miserable and they will too. Now, keep in mind something. Your attorney is your legal counselor and not your therapist. What does your attorney sell? They sell their time. You are buying their time. You pay them by the hour. So if you call them and you get into your divorce story and you spend an hour and a half chatting about how horrible your ex is, you can't stand him another minute, he's driving you crazy, the kids are this and that, and you notice that your retainer that month has a $325 phone call, and you go, what the heck is this from? Well, if your attorney charges $250 an hour and you were bending their ear for an hour and a half, you will see that on your bill. So keep that in mind. Now, your attorney must communicate with you. Let's face it, you know, You're paying them a lot of money to represent you, but you have to have a consistent communication that works for both of you. Some people want their attorney to communicate with them daily. That is a very lofty order. Attorneys are very busy, and if you find one that does that, good luck, because they're not out there. And if you need daily communication, then you may want to rethink how you process and how you can maybe adjust, because that's going to be a tough call. Weekly communication, that's pretty good. That is a good expectation. Should they communicate with you via text, emails? Well, I think a quick text, I picked up your filings is okay. Details about your filings should come to you in an email or even by regular postal mail or FedEx, depending on if they need your signatures or if you have to seek good copies. And one of the things that I am hoping that attorneys do and that are use portals, sort of like what doctors do. Now, how you can check the status of your appointment, the results of your blood work from your physical, or anything that has to do with your medications with your doctor. They post it right up in the portal. Some attorneys may be starting that. That would be a great idea, something you may want to suggest, so that as they work on your case, you can stay on top of that. So it's very important to discuss the communication between you and your attorney, because I'm telling you, if you don't have that nailed down, you are going to be miserable and they are going to be miserable. And it's just going to be an all-out uncomfortable relationship. You are already going through a divorce. You don't want to be uncomfortable with your attorney. So get this nailed down. Keep in mind, when you leave a message for them, they get back to you when they can. Don't start getting yourself all knotted up if an hour or two goes by. They have other clients. Very often they're in court. If they say to you, I have court tomorrow afternoon at 1:30, that doesn't mean they're out by 2:30. They may not be out till 5:30. Because if they have a 1:30 docket for a case they have, they may be one of several on that afternoon docket, and their case may not be heard until 4:30. Seriously, this happens a lot. So keep that in mind when you start to get a little bent out of shape because they're not getting right back to you. Number 7, that you must ask your attorney or prospective attorney before you hire them. And that is, does the attorney intend to try your case in front of a judge? Cases may be settled out of court and work well for non-contentious divorces. They also work very well for short divorces where there's no children, no property. Boom. You can settle out of court, be in and out of there in a second in the judge's chambers, 15, 20 minutes, hour at most. If your divorce escalates to be contentious, or if you have a lot of property and there's children, or if the two of you had a business together, that will require a very detailed divorce agreement and settlement, which should be tried in front of a judge. So you want to ask your attorney if that's what they do. Some attorneys like mediation. They really don't want to be in front of a judge. But if you have something complex, you want to take it in front of a judge. Now, that doesn't mean you want the judge to make a decision. And I want to just make an aside there. You want to make your own decisions. You don't want the judge to have to do that. But you do want a judge to reiterate all the parts of your divorce agreement and then sign off as a decree. Number 8, is the attorney willing to ask for a court-appointed judge to be assigned to your case? In some jurisdictions throughout the United States, judges are assigned to cases, meaning you have a divorce, you file, you get assigned a judge, and that judge is with your case from beginning to end. Anytime you go into court, you get that judge. If your jurisdiction does not do that, you may, depending on your jurisdiction, be able to petition the court to have your own court-appointed judge. This means that each time you go to court, you will appear before the same judge. The benefit of that is the judge becomes very familiar with your case and is able to make a decision predicated on the history of your case. If you don't have a court-appointed judge, you will walk in the day of your divorce hearing or trial, and the judge will come into the room and there will be several other cases. They will usually have a stack of folders. Before the judge appears on the bench, they may have perused your file for a few minutes earlier that morning or maybe the day before. If you have not a super complex case, or if you and your attorney and your soon-to-be ex's attorney have really worked out a great settlement, it's been set, you're both happy with it, it's been sent to the judge, all the judge has to do is reiterate it, put it into the docket, sign off for it, fantastic. But if you have a lot of contention going on and there's custody issues and you're going to be back and forth into court a couple times, it may be a good idea to have your own judge, somebody that becomes familiar with your case so that they can make a decision, especially if you need them to make a decision, predicated on the history of the case. So if you have a complex case and you feel as though you are going to be in court more than one time, you should ask the attorney if they will petition the court for you to have your own court-appointed judge. That means every time you go into court, you will appear in front of that judge. Number 9, ask the prospective attorney what happens if the best laid plans don't resolve in your favor. That means your spouse continues to violate custody. Your spouse does not pay child support regularly or at all. Or your spouse doesn't follow other areas of the settlement. Your attorney or any attorney you hire must have a clear, concise plan for how they intend to try your case and create roadblocks for violations. So if your ex is not going to pay child support, they have that mapped out. It's in the decree. In the event that the child support is not paid on time, ... here's what's going to happen, ... Not the dots, folks, but you know what I mean. So you want that plan in place so there's no wiggle room for anybody to misbehave. You also want a clear, concise plan B that should be available in the event challenges derail the first course of plan. So last and not least, number 10. Address post-divorce scenarios. What does that mean? You're divorced, right? Well, what are the options for modification of initial settlement? Well, as you will learn as we go through the other parts of this program that I have provided for you, when I talk about finances, I talk about the ability to modify settlements. And that usually doesn't happen. The only way any modification of a final settlement can be made, other than child support, child custody, it would have to be at the agreement of both parties. So why would you even need modification of initial settlement? I don't know. But if you are not steadfast and strong and on task about what is required in your settlement, after the fact, it's going to be very difficult. So if you forget something, if you forget, oh my goodness, the children need dental care, and you haven't discussed that issue in the settlement, it's not mapped out perfectly, the likelihood of asking your ex, then ex-spouse, or even being able to go into court to ask for the dental care is going to be very, very tough. So address any post-divorce scenarios, such as initial settlement, with this attorney. If you had to go back, what would they do? Address parental alienation post-divorce. The biggest issues that people have after divorce are child support and parental alienation. How does your attorney handle that? You know, the day you walk out of the courthouse isn't the day the attorney shakes your hand and says, goodbye, it's been great. You may still need them for your divorce, post-divorce. So talk about what happens if parental alienation ensues post-divorce. Will they go to court with you post-divorce? If you have a really terrific, equitable, even if it's not terrific and equitable, but you have an agreement that you and your ex, now ex, have agreed upon when it comes to child custody and child support, and let's say, for example, you pick the children up every other Friday and he has the children the alternate Fridays, and you go to pick the children up on Fridays and the children aren't there. He makes it a point that they're not there. Or if you are in a divorce and it's your time to take the children on holiday and your wife decides, I'm not going to have them ready, and she takes them out of town and you go to pick them up and the children aren't there and you end up losing the trip. You don't make it to the airport in time, and the cost of the tickets. What happens then? So address post-divorce scenarios. A third one to talk about, what if your ex-spouse threatens you, stalks you, any unforeseen behaviors that you don't think about that start to surface after the divorce. Now, you may say, look, you're divorced. Why does this happen? People disengage from marriages at different times, and a lot of times it's right after the divorce that they recognize, wow, this is really over. Legally, we are no longer married. Legally, I don't have any claims to that person. And that's where some of these behaviors, the threats, the stalking, weird stuff starts to happen. Ask your attorney, where are they on all of this? How do they address any post-divorce scenarios that may arise? Remember something. You cannot change the behavior of another person. You can only change how you respond and how you behave. Divorce is a legal process. It's about taking a contract that was a legal contract and dissolving it. And that's called divorce absolute or dissolution of divorce. Different states, different jurisdictions call it different things, but the marriage is dissolved. It's a legal and binding contract. Whatever your ex, soon to be ex, former spouse does, that's what they do. But what's really important to remember is that you have the power of how you behave, how you act, and what you do. And it's imperative that your attorney is the person who best represents the integrity that you bring to this journey. By asking the 10 questions along with receiving the 10 answers that I presented in this PowerPoint, you should be able to acquire the right attorney for your case. If you have questions, I have answers. As part of this program, you are entitled to one email with me where I will provide you with a short answer. If you have further questions about how to interview and select the best attorney for your case or other guidance as you go through your divorce process, just set up a consult with me. If your question exceeds a short answer, I'm available for a telephone coaching session. To schedule online, visit www.susanschoeffer.com/coaching sessions and click the link and select a time that works best for you. But I have a feeling that you have all your questions answered. And again, more than likely, any question you have, I should be able to send just a short answer your way.